Every human being has an inherited right to speak, to be heard, and to be understood. Each of us has three unchangeable, undeniable core needs: to belong, to be worthy, to be competent. When one of these three is out of balance, we begin to condemn ourselves and judge others, place unhealthy stress on our bodies, our relationships with ourselves, friends and family, and even our life work are judged. The power of words and the intent of our questions are the first steps to our peaceful and prosperous now and future. Call in and let's create choices for your destiny. 888-627-6008.
Welcome to the Linda S. Brewer, Your Destiny Architect Show. The intent of our show is for you to have an opportunity to call in and ask a question about a conflict in your life, be it a relationship question, health, finances, or life work issue. Remember, our interaction line is 888. 627-6008. Your questions are welcome to help you create a choice for your destiny. And we are honored and privileged to have with us tonight as our guest, Dr. Diane Pomeroy from Dallas, Texas. Diane is the author of 9 books, 7 of which is non-fictional about animals. She has a deep love and a profound respect for nature and all living creatures. And she writes and speaks of this interconnectedness and interdependence of the whole of life. She is an animal lover and an advocate who has rescued, rehabilitated, and adopted more than 40 dogs. Spirituality is the passion of her life, and she has dedicated her life to spiritual research and exploration. Take a deep breath, and in your own way, let's welcome Diane to spend some time with us tonight as we discuss where she began and where she is now. And Diane, through her work and her studies, has developed courses and teachings on grief. And tonight we're going to be discussing grief just in our day-to-day life. And then in approximately 8 weeks, we're going to have 3 major holidays in the United States: Thanksgiving, Christmas, and New Year's. And we will be exploring what type of grief experiences can come up. And then Diane has willingly and acceptedly said she will speak to us about some of the grief that can be going on in our world in the United States after tomorrow, when we have this election, and probably all over the world as we have had the world watching us. So Diane, a warm, warm welcome to you, my friend. Thank you for joining us.
Oh, thank you so much. My pleasure and privilege.
Well, would you just start, Diane, with what started you on the journey, and anything that you would like to share that you know that would be a benefit of anyone listening, that would be an honor. Your own.
Sure. When I was very young, I was very much a loner, and I adored nature. Anything to do with the natural world, animals, the beauty of the world, the mountains, the rivers, the lakes, the oceans, the woods, and so on. And from that perspective, I loved being alone. And I loved being alone with that beautiful presence that is in all living things. And the purity of that presence in nature was so obvious to me, so apparent. And at that point, I started researching. My dad was a professor at American University, and we had a library that was absolutely amazing, and we had philosophy, literature, religion, books about just every topic that you can think of. And I used to lock myself up down in the basement, and I would read and read and read, and I was just a voracious reader. And in my readings, I came across a wonderful book, actually introduced to me by a dear, dear friend. It was called The Autobiography of a Yogi by Paramahansa Yogananda. And this is not as forbidding as it might sound. It was an absolutely beautiful read. And the book is featured in many college graduate courses on philosophy and religion and so forth. And it was transformative to me. And at the same time, I met an Indian guru in Toronto, Canada. And he was amazing and charismatic and charming and so wise. And so I began my studies into Hinduism. His particular movement was called Radha Swami, and I learned about meditation and the flow of life and how it was to be at peace, to be still, and to experience the beauty of life and the beauty of nature and the wonderful thread that unites us all. And so I became very much aware of the interconnectedness, the interdependence of the whole of life. And from that point on, I began studying virtually every religion you can think of. Now, that's an exaggeration, but I did study many esoteric religions. I studied with a Zen Buddhist master. I studied with a Hindu master, Swami Muktananda, and his protege, Swami Chidvilasananda. And in the process, I just explored and expanded in my understanding of what the significance of life was. And when I was 28, 29, I met a woman in West Hollywood, California, where I was living. Actually, I had lived in New York before that, and I was in the entertainment industry. And I went to Los Angeles to further my career. And I ran into a dear college friend of mine. I worked as a story analyst for NBC, and I was turning in stories on a Friday afternoon that I had written to evaluate their potential for being made into movies for television and movies of the week and so on and so forth, and TV series. And my friend Michelle told me about this remarkable woman named Catherine Hayward. And I said, Michelle, you've changed so much. You're doing so well. And she said, it's really in great part due to the work of this woman, Catherine Hayward. You must come to her home. She has public meetings at her home on Sundays from 11 to about 1. They're free to the public, and I think you'll really enjoy meeting her. She's a psychic who was born in turn-of-the-century England, 1899, and she had an out-of-the-body experience at the age of 7, during which she communicated with angelic beings. And the angelic beings advised her to return to the physical body. She had so-called died of double pneumonia and pleurisy, which, as you can imagine, in turn-of-the-century Wales, the medical technology was such that it was not really very effective, and particularly in this case. And when the doctor had pronounced Catherine dead, she heard her mother cry and sob, and the angels had told her to go back into the body, and she did. She returned to the physical body. And upon awakening, emerging from this extraordinary experience, and she recalled that the angels were so loving and that the atmosphere was so pure and beautiful and radiant. She had no desire to go back to the physical body, frankly. She wanted to stay with the angelic beings, but she felt compelled to go back to the body. And when she did, she awoke speaking at the age of 7 in a full, mature adult voice and knew past, present, and future. so that she was able to predict. And when someone knocked at the door, she knew who it was, even though she was in a bedroom on the second floor of the house. And she said to her mother, "Mom, those are terrible people. Please don't let them in anymore. They do very bad things to children." And her mother thought she was delirious or hysterical. But it turned out that the Williams that Catherine had described were child molesters and were evicted from the community. So Catherine's abilities could not be disputed. She predicted local elections. She knew when people were lying and telling the truth. And so from that point on, Catherine was an adult on so many levels in a child's body. And throughout her childhood, she was invalided. She was very fragile. And in the course of her recuperation, she came across many, many great teachings, one of which was facilitated and created, actually, by Dr. Anton Mesmer. And, of course, he's the father of hypnosis, mesmerism. And through this, Catherine learned that thoughts are things and that as you think, you create. And that we create our lives, we create the world, especially on a group level where people of like mind are praying and seeing the world, envisioning the world at peace and so forth. So those were the seeds of Catherine's teachings. And when I met her, I was 29 years old, and Catherine spoke about, I remember that first meeting like it was yesterday. We sat in a room in her lounge in a little Jane Marple. I don't know if you recall who Jane Marple is, but an Agatha Christie character. And Catherine had a bungalow in West Hollywood that was filled with English objet d'art and lovely pastoral paintings and landscapes and vases filled with fresh flowers and antiques. And when I met Catherine, I sat directly opposite her, and she started talking, and she was a very charismatic, charming person. And if you know who Judi Dench is, the actress, she had that kind of contralto, extraordinary British accent and voice, and she was witty and charming and feisty, etc. And she said, "There is no death. You could not die if you wanted to. The real you is neither the mind nor the body, but the power that motivates the mind and the body. And as you think, you create, and you are constantly creating and co-creating your life. And the negatives are responsible for a lot of the negativity in your lives. And the positives contribute not only to the wellness of your being and the wellness of your life, but also to the wellness of the planet." And so that, in a nutshell, is how I met Catherine Hayward. And I just spent 5 years completing her biography and researching the places in England and the U.K., where she had lived and lectured and worked. But her ultimate purpose throughout World Wars I and II was to prove there is no death. And she communicated with the so-called dead and was able to prove completely that they existed beyond death. And she did so by relaying facts to the members of the so-called dead's family that no one else could possibly know. And so it offered great comfort and solace to those who wondered what had happened to their loved ones in Flanders Field and across the ocean, of course. So that's a little bit of a background.
And the name of your book is A Woman of Vision, correct?
Catherine, A Woman of Vision.
Yeah, Woman of Vision. So as you were talking, one of the saying came up for me is, if you never read a book, you live one life. But if you read books, you live many lives.
Yes.
And so share with our listeners and myself, if you summarized what the impact of meeting Catherine and doing the book, what impact has it had on you personally, and how do you take that into your work and your life to help others come along?
Well, Catherine taught me so many things in terms of there being no death. And, of course, wow, what a concept that is. And she taught that there is no hellfire or damnation. And for many people, and I have many, many friends that are lapsed Catholics and so on, and rejected dogmatic religion and so forth, and formal religion, who are so receptive to these concepts. There's a part of them, just like there was a part of me when I first met Catherine and listened to her, that I knew to be the truth. And don't ask me how, because I hadn't necessarily read about life on the other side, and that we're spiritual beings, and that we're here to evolve spiritually. And that's another of Catherine's teachings. She taught that life on earth is a school, and we're all here simultaneously at different grade levels. Some of us are in like the one-room schoolhouse, the one-room world, where some of us are in preschool, some of us are in kindergarten, some of us are in elementary school, junior high school, college, graduate school, and so on, so that the Gandhis and the Mother Teresas of the world are in postgraduate school. But they are the examples, the role models, which we are here to emulate and to become. And so this was an incredible concept for me, that, and it made so much sense. Like, how do you explain the discrepancies of life? She taught reincarnation, that we're not here simply one time. Does that make any sense, logically, that some of us will come in as a quadriplegic or a child born with AIDS or a protege that was a master musician at the age of two or three, composing and conducting music and so on? And so it just all made sense to me. And it forever transformed my view, my perspective about life. And it also enabled me to be much more accepting of the inequities in life, and that we're here, but we're here to grow spiritually. And that, yes, we go from grade one to grade two to grade three, but we have to pass each of those grades in order to proceed. And so in the process, we would evolve spiritually, and that spiritual evolution is our ultimate destiny, that we are divine, and that the God seed is within each and every human being. And just as Aristotle called it, the entelechy, the higher self, the seed, the God seed, as it were, resides within each and every one of us. And so that we possess that, and ultimately it is our destiny to become that great, greater being, that greater human being, and that the human potential is vast and divine and unlimited, but we are in the process of discovering that. And that's why we're here on Earth in the densest of matter, dealing with the physical aspects of life and so on. And ultimately, when we've passed these tests, as Jesus did, Buddha did, etc., that we are ready to leave the incarnation process on Earth and move to higher levels, higher planes of life.
So, Diane, do you sometimes one may think they have a master's degree, and then life circumstances comes around and hits them in the face, and they realize, I better go back to kindergarten?
They don't go back to kindergarten. They're at the master's level. If they're at the master's level, they may have to retake a course or two, but it's not going back. You don't ever go back into kindergarten. Once you've passed, you pass, just like elementary school. Think in terms of our school systems, and you wouldn't really... in the high school years, et cetera, go back to kindergarten. You would just move on, but you correct what needed correcting.
So you're always building on your knowledge, your
yes,
experience.
Yes, you are. Yes.
And tapping into that wisdom.
Yes.
That if we listened to in the beginning and was wise enough to do that, life would certainly be more honoring and peaceful among people. So
well, and I think that's a wonderful aspect of this whole analogy of life on Earth being a school. You don't judge preschoolers, and you don't hate them, and you don't shoot them, and you don't exert violence to them, because you know, well, they're preschoolers. They're 4 or 5 years old. They don't know any better. That's the stage of life that they're at. So you allow that. You embrace that. And you understand that they're on the same path that you are. And ultimately, they will be where you are and beyond. That's their destiny.
And so as you go through life, as I had an image as you were speaking, that we start off a lot of times as Little Red Riding Hood. And those who have gone on before us are dropping crumbs, and we can pick them up and taste them or spit them out or hop over them or whatever to get us to where we need to go.
Absolutely.
But we are. And so if you had one essence point out of Catherine, a woman of vision, or out of your life for our listeners, what would that be?
That life on Earth is a school, and that we're all here to evolve spiritually. That is our goal. That is the reason we inhabit these physical bodies and move from lesson to lesson to lesson, and that all life presents lessons, and we're here. It's how graceful our acceptance, and so much is attitude, and if we can muster gratitude, understanding that these are lessons through which we grow spiritually, we are well on our way to achieve spiritual evolution.
And in the work that I do, it's all about how we can choose the next step or the next choice that will honor ourselves. And
yes.
Moving through what I call that gate of gratitude.
Yes.
And do you have a moment or an experience in time when you knew or you committed, I'm just going to live my life in gratitude? Or was it a gradual thing for you?
Oh, I think it was a gradual thing on the conscious level. I think on the unconscious level, I've always been grateful. As I mentioned before, I was a child of nature. And I wept at the beauty of nature, sincerely. As a child, I remember just seeing the mountains, and I lived in Los Angeles, and at that time it wasn't congested, the one that we know today, but it was beautiful, the bougainvillea and the jasmine and the mountains and the ocean, and I felt profound connectedness and gratitude for all of those things. And as I've gotten older, I recognize gratitude in so many different forms. I recognize gratitude for each experience, no matter how painful, no matter how difficult. I recognize that it's challenging me, it's molding me into someone greater that has endurance, that has stamina, that has fortitude, that is able to help other people, and that gratitude is profound. It just is. And of course, I never used to be grateful for the negatives in my life. I think, oh, what do I need this for? Come on, this is silly. I don't want to do that, you know. And as of late, in the past couple of years, I've just recognized how integral to our nature it is to respond with gratitude. And knowing this, that all is well.
And we are coming up on a short break. And after the break, I would love for us to talk about our commercial break. I would love for us to talk about the power of words, because language is such a passion of
mine. So powerful. So powerful.
Yes.
And so few of us are aware of how powerful.
Absolutely. And then if you're okay with that, anything else you would like to share? And then we will go into the grief. So our listeners, our call-in for interaction is 888-627-6008. 0008, and we will take a short break to have some valuable information from our sponsors. So please stay tuned, and we'll be back shortly. Thank you.
Have you ever caught yourself thinking, what is wrong with me? What is the belief that stops me? I know I have amazing potential locked inside and an incredible destiny waiting now. The unhealthy belief, which is always rooted in a lie, do I belong? Am I worthy? Am I competent? Which creates an unhealthy relationship with oneself and others. Stress within and between. Battles of self-worth and value, anxieties and past failures all have the potential to lead us into a skewed view of what is a healthy relationship. Connect now with Linda Brewer to discover your belief that is stopping you from creating the destiny you were born to live. You speak, you are heard, you choose your destiny. Visit her at lsgcorporate.com.
Thank you for staying tuned with us or just joining us. And this evening, we are honored to have Dr. Diane Pomerantz with us. And in this second half, we're going to talk about the power of our words, which is such a passion of mine. And then I think that plays Diane into such a vital part of how we manage grief and how we process grief. And so tell us about your passion for words and your how you've come to know how powerful they are and that they really do create our destiny. And we had talked about we were going to discuss grief, like how we process them on a day-to-day, which is certainly how we speak. And then about coming into our holiday season, and about our election of the United States of America and the grief that people can possibly feel, whether whoever you vote for win or lose. I've heard more in the last week about the day after the election is going to be just as important, if not more so, than the election day. So share with us, my friend.
Well, you know, the after the election, there definitely is a grieving process that takes place. First of all, we've experienced the loss of trust in our public officials. And the ugliness that has taken place throughout the campaign is unparalleled, and we're not used to it. And we recognize the power of words and bullying, and that's become a huge issue aside from the election, the fact that our words do play such a powerful role in determining how others perceive us, how we perceive the world, and again, they affect the world. They affect our society. And we need to be conscious of our words and how they can hurt or help. And in this election, again, in terms of whatever the results may be, we have been through the wars on so many levels. We've been through the battles of name-calling and bullying divisiveness, and it's all so terribly upsetting because we're not used to this. I mean, we experience it occasionally in our social lives or in the media when we watch a film that deals with violence and conflict, etc. But the words of our public officials and our presidential candidates has been unexpected and to many of us, inexplicable and so biased and so unfair, and we're exposed to that, and our children are exposed to that. And we have to recognize that as we think, we create. and that as we think positively, and that's why prayer is so important. Catherine taught, and many others, of course, have taught, that as we think, we create, and that where two or three are gathered in my name, the words are very powerful, and the presence of God is with us, and that we need to think in terms of guiding our thoughts and being aware, mindfulness, as they call it, mindfulness of how we direct our words and thoughts so that we can make a planet, so that we can create a society full of love and peace, as opposed to dividing and hurting and harming one another through our words. So it's time to recognize that we have the power. And I know that I pray for peace, and that prayer is indeed very powerful, and that we need, again, to use our words carefully and to guard our thoughts and actions into ways of service, that we may be of service to God, to planet Earth, to whatever you might want to call it. But these are very, very powerful tools to help us achieve balance on the planet, and balance is pivotal to all of our well-being. And here we hear so many stories about strife and want and having not enough and children suffering, for example, in Aleppo. It's horrible. It's horrific. Yet through our words, persistent, constant, patient words and efforts, we can create change. And I know a lot of people are dubious or skeptical, but we can. We are the co-creators. We can make a difference in the world. And so again, and in terms of the holidays and what comes up, so many of us have lost loved ones. It can be a human being. It can be, as I said, loss of trust, loss of safety in our public officials, upon whom we relied and upon whom we trusted and had faith, and now we're witnessing their descent into nastiness and ugliness. We must keep thoughts and words positive. And this is a discipline. It requires constant work. It's not, oh, I'll think positive now. No. It's constant effort, and it requires constant work and catching yourself. And just like you'd go to a gym and exercise on a daily basis and perhaps many times throughout the day, you need to exercise those muscles and exercise, again, catching yourself thinking negatives and transmuting those negatives into positives.
And I understand that part of your belief system is living in the moment. And when we live in the moment and we're consciously aware of our words, are they judging, blaming, condemning, or they're encouraging, empowering, and honoring, even about ourselves. And that is a discipline that once you begin to practice it, and in my world, taking deep breaths and just making an intention and a commitment to yourself, listen to your words, and
first think about your words. Don't speak in haste. Think about the consequences of the words you're about to speak.
And ownership of them. I'm very conscious anytime I start to use you, especially if it's a discussion that I'm uncomfortable with, I always, not always, but my intention is to take a deep breath and say, this is how I feel, or I'm interpreting that, or so I'm taking ownership and responsibility.
Yes.
And that is a powerful way for your words to become powerful.
Yes.
And it's so easy to slip into it. Doug, who owns BBS Radio, I called him the other day and I said, I need to do something. And he says, no, you don't need to. You choose to. I thought, good golly, Miss Molly, I teach that all the time. But this whole week, you know, has just made such an impact. So as we become teachers of our own experiences and words and passion, and then people see us modeling it, I think that's one way to build trust. And I think that's something that's really going to be needed in the days to come. And our world and the political world, and I think what has happened in America with this political situation we are in now, the whole world is watching.
Of course.
And they're just, what happened to the leaders of America? So, yes. And the grief of the holidays, it doesn't necessarily mean you can just grieve. I don't think people, and sometimes it's hard for people to understand that our bodies grieve. A mentor of mine once said, if your body loses 5 pounds, it goes through the same process as if you've lost someone.
Mm-hmm.
And if we lose $5 or we condemn ourselves for paying $5 too much for something or $100 too much, grief just has many faces.
Yes, it does. Yes, it does. And, you know, there's some grief is cumulative, and I'd like our listeners to know that. It took me a long time to recognize that fact. And we are the product of so many grief issues. You may not consciously remember feeling grief, and it could be the loss of a pet or a dog, whatever, a dog or a cat in your youth. It could be the loss of a sibling, a family member, an aunt or an uncle, or whatever it might be. It can be graduation. It can be empty nest. It can be retirement. There are so many, loss of health, loss of finance, loss of property, loss of position. You know, so many people associate themselves with their position, and then they're downsized, and they have no position, and they don't know why they're so upset. And it is a grief issue, of course. They've lost a part of who they are, a part of their identity. And so during the holidays, whatever losses we've had tend to be exacerbated because we are ultimately alone. And that's something that few people consider. But, you know, throughout life, birth, throughout our living years, our middle ages and our old age, and ultimately our death, we are essentially alone. And yes, of course, we may have loved ones that care about us, but we live with our consciences, and we live with what we've done and what we haven't done. And again, we, during the holidays, see the closeness of family and friends, the celebrations, the joy, and of course, it makes so much sense that people are enjoying and celebrating, and why not the beauty of the season? It's a beautiful season. However, those of us who have lost a loved one and are deeply mourning that loss, whether it be a pet, whether it be the dog or cat that you've had for so many years and is no longer with you this holiday season, and it may have acted as your anchor because animals are truthful. They're unconditionally loving. They don't lie. They don't have an agenda. They're authentic. They are who they precisely seem to be. And you know, it's just we miss that honesty, that anchor, and we miss the loss of family, whether it be a spouse, a sibling, etc. And so it's difficult for us to express it, especially while others are celebrating and encouraging us to participate in the celebrations. This is something that we just can't even conceive of because we don't feel a part of that celebration. We want to be alone, and we're entitled to be alone, and don't ever feel guilty for that. Don't feel like you have to adhere to, you know, the family commandments of, well, we always do this Christmas Eve, and we always do this. If you're not up to it, you're not up to it, and you will be one day, but this is not the time.
Well, since we have connected, and I've sensed and felt and grateful for your love and power of all of life, and especially the animals that you have invited into your world, is what's the vows that we make to ourselves, the promises that we make to ourselves when we have losses and grief and things. And my own personal
gratitude
was
gratitude.
Yeah. But when I was 5 years old, somebody poisoned my dog, and I remember kneeling down by Lassie and having her head in my lap and looking up to God and saying, "If you are such a God that you would take something that I love so much, I don't need you. Get out of my way." Mm-hmm. And I spent the next 35, 40 years not being able to be grateful because I couldn't feel.
Right.
And my favorite saying was, "Get out of my way, I'm coming through." And life was hell in every sense of the way. And I didn't know the meaning of thank you. I didn't know how to express gratitude. And so then it starts to tell on our bodies because our body says it's enough. So living in that beautiful gate of gratitude and going through that forgiveness and exploration.
It's an acquired ability, let's put it that way. It doesn't come naturally.
Yeah. Right. Well, great. I love that. And it is something every human being can acquire and live and be in regardless of where they are in life. So, and Diane, our time is coming to the end on the air, and I am eternally grateful.
So am I. What a pleasure to meet you. Thank you.
Yes. And is there anything you would like to say to our guests and how they can contact you? Or I believe you're doing some courses on grief. Are those just going to be in person, or are you going to have those via internet?
You know, I'm always up to something. And yes, I'm doing a Griever's Guide to the Holidays. Actually, what I'm hoping to do is put them online. So I'm working on that as we speak, and they can contact me. I'm in Dallas, Texas, drdianepomerantz.com, and that's drdianepomerantz.com, and that's my website. And feel free to comment and to connect with me. I'd love to hear from you. And as far as Catherine, the book is Catherine, A Woman of Vision. That's K-A-T-H-E-R-I-N-E. And you can get it on Amazon.com and Barnes & Noble. It's everywhere. It's just everywhere. And I think her story will be one of inspiration. And she led a hard life. She had psychic ability. But you know what? It's not for herself. It was always outside issues. She had her lessons, her life lessons to learn, just as we all do. And so she was not privy to information that, you know, win the lottery and whatever. That was not her gift. Her gift was to help others and to understand the transition between life and death. And so I think you'd find her story fascinating and very uplifting and inspiring. So,
and do you have a weekly or bi-weekly show on Voice America?
No, I actually have a bi-weekly program, a podcast, which I started. It's the first time in my life I've ever done it, on RealRevolutionRadio.com.
Okay.
And it's called Who Are You Really? The Emerging New Age.
Okay. So,
and I'd love for you to be a guest on that show.
Oh, I would love it. Thank you so much.
Oh, yes. You're welcome so much.
Yes. And as we wrap out tonight, I am your host, Linda S. Brewer, and you can reach me at lindasbrewer.com or email me at lindab@lindasbrewer.com. or call me, 864-205-2518. And we do have on our website, lsgcorporate.com, the Core Value Index. And not only do we come with three unchangeable, undeniable needs to belong, to be worthy, to be competent, we come with four undeniable core energies. And in those core energies, we have one core energy that will help us make our greatest contribution in life without stress. And it will help you stay in that place of gratitude and just enjoy your life because you know who you are at your core. And that can be found up in the right-hand corner as you face your screen, CVI. Be sure and put in your correct email because you will get your report, and that will be permanently. And if you would like to know more about that, and for a 15-minute free consultation, just email me at lindasbrewer.com. And you can either mention tonight Dr. Diane Pomerantz, or you can mention your Destiny Architect show. And remember, we will be back next Monday night, and our call-in is 888-627-6008. Diane, my heart overflows with gratitude. I feel like I've had Thanksgiving, Christmas, and a way to begin a new year already. So thank you for beginning the next 8 years.
Oh, how kind you are, and I thank you.
Well, and so to all of our listeners, thank you. And remember, you matter. Create a great life for you. Good night. Blessings, peace, and we close with a grateful heart for Diane, our radio Doug, BBS, and each of you. Blessings, Linda Brewer. Thank you.